Welcome to Season 2 of Fresh Growth, a podcast by the Western SARE Program, a sustainable agriculture research and education. I'm your host, Steve Elliott, alongside co-host Stacey Clary. Just for background, Western SARE is funded by the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Institute of Food and Agriculture to promote sustainable farming and ranching across the American West through research, education, and communication efforts like this podcast. Fresh Growth introduces producers and agricultural professionals from around the West who are embracing new ways of farming and ranching. They'll tell us about their experiences adopting more sustainable agricultural practices and the challenges and benefits they've seen. Today's guest is Sally Gale, who along with her husband Mike operates Chileno Valley Ranch in Marin County, California. She and Mike returned to the family ranch in 1993, restoring buildings, infrastructure, and the land, planting hundreds of apple trees and starting a grass-fed beef business. They reached out to family ranchers, NRCS, Ag Extension, and the Marin Resource Conservation District to help them restore the degraded land on their ranch. Sally talks about the importance of community partnerships and collaborations to improve watersheds and wildlife habitat while operating a profitable ranch. Sally, welcome, and thanks for sitting down with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes, Sally, thank you very much for taking the time. We appreciate it. And I understand that you have a long family history of the ranch. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Sure. Well, this ranch has been in my family for five generations, and I'm not a young person. I'm 78 already, and I have grandkids, so that would be seven generations, I guess. But my ancestors bought this ranch in 1862 from Henry Halleck, who left the Presidio to go back to Washington to become President Abraham Lincoln's chief of staff. So that gives you kind of an idea of the time that my family started living on this ranch. And pretty much we've been here the whole time until the ranch was rented out in 1917. But the ownership has stayed the same.
And that's quite a history. Can you take us back to when you and Mike first came to the ranch? What was the land like then?
When Mike and I moved over from Hawaii to take over the ranch, you know, you could say the ranch was in bad shape, but there were parts of it that were in good shape and parts of it that were in bad shape. If you drove by and you looked at the buildings, you would think that it was very neglected. We were casting about for names to name the ranch, and one of the things we came up with was the Falling Down Ranch, or since we came from Hawaii, in Pidgin it would be No Mo Mo Fo Fix'em Ranch, which means really it's a no-hoper kind of a ranch. So the buildings were all dilapidated, the fences were down, the water system didn't work, the creek was completely denuded of trees, but the pastures weren't too bad. My cousins, who had been in the cattle business for a long time and who lived in a valley over the hill, had taken pretty good care of the pastures, I would say.
With all of that, what motivated you and Mike to come back?
Well, basically, we had been in Hawaii for about 20 years, but my family, my parents, were living here in Novato, which is about 20 miles from here. And my parents were getting older, and I wanted to be around them, you know, as they aged. And also, my mother had just given me the ranch. She gave me the ranch in 1986. And then we stayed in Hawaii so that my son could finish high school, and we moved over in 1993.
Had you been ranchers before?
Oh, no. We did a lot of reading.
Uh-huh. So how many acres? I mean, tell us, you know, how big is the, how much land?
The ranch is 586 acres.
Uh-huh.
I had never even seen it until the mid-80s when my mother drove me by and said, well, what do you think about this ranch? Because my family actually owned a number of ranches, eight ranches in Marin County, in common with many, many cousins and aunts and uncles and relatives. And at the time that they were going to divide the ranches up, my mother drove me by and said, well, this, you know, this rundown old ranch is, you know, on the list. What do you think of this one? And I said, oh my God, I love it. I want this one because it's so run down. It had a beautiful old house on it. I mean, the, you know, the bones, as people say, it was a Victorian Italian house, and then the barns were big and wooden, you know, redwood barns. And I just thought it was gorgeous. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know, I really would love this ranch, Mom.
That's not bad. So to talk us through those first years, I mean, realizing what you need to do, and how did you come to realize what you needed to do and to change the way that it had been run or managed, and where did you turn for help?
Well, I'm a believer in, if you want to do something, you'll find a way to do it. And if you want to do it hard enough, you'll do a really great job. So we just, you know, we just started. The first thing we had to do was create a living space for ourselves. So there was a little creamery that we fixed up that we could move into. Mm-hmm. And then we started working on the house, you know, because that was what we had. I mean, we needed to move into a house. But at the same time, we worked on the water system, the fences, just so that we would have water. We needed water. There was no water to the house. And of course, we got the electricity going. So those very first things were kind of obvious, you know, what you needed to do. The design of the house, what we did is we restored an old house, but we had to knock down half of it and then rebuild it. So we kind of had to design the whole thing over again. So, you know, that was a little hard because no one had ever designed a house before. But we kind of figured it out. I just spent a lot of time drawing pictures. Mm-hmm. And just trying to figure it out. You know, at first we tried to kind of make it work. You know, we had to have the basic infrastructure, water, fencing. We didn't even have cows at the time. I continued to rent it out for about 5 years. Mm-hmm. Housing, you know, just the basics.
Right.
And that was pretty obvious. And who did I go to for help? Nobody. We just did it. But then when we started ranching, we really did need to reach out. So, of course, there were my cousins, many of whom are in the ranching business, that could serve as advisors. Mm-hmm. And NRCS was really big at the time. My father was connected with NRCS. The local NRCS office, and they were very helpful. They turned us on to the local Marin Resource Conservation District and to Ag Extension. Mm-hmm. So we went to lots of workshops, whatever. I would say if anyone is interested in starting like we did, that going to as many workshops, or I guess it would be webinars now, that you can is helpful. You know, we did reach out and ask for help. We tried to get grants for various parts of the project. And we didn't do it alone, definitely. We didn't mm-hmm. do it alone.
So after you start working with NRCS and Ag Extension, what advice did they provide you or assistance on just making some changes to the land to improve the land?
Well, as I say, it all started with infrastructure. So NRCS was our first contact, and they helped us develop springs. They helped us do a cost share on spring development and water trough, setting up the water troughs for the cattle, and some of the fencing that went for rotational grazing. You know, the ranch is two large parcels and, you know, 586 acres. So we wanted to create pastures within it so that we could effectively move the cows around. So NRCS was really our big player at first. They turned us on to, in 1996, they turned us on to the Marin Resource Conservation District. And it just so happened that they were at the end of a $1 million grant through the Coastal Conservancy to restore creeks. And someone had backed out, and Charlotte Epifanio, who was with NRCS, heard about it. And so she called us and said, because I had asked her about some gully repairs, and she told us to call up Pronesky Chatham, which was contracted to work with the Marin Resource Conservation District. And they came by and approved our project. So the project that we did with them was to fence off a half a mile of creek and to plant it with native plants. And we employed out-of-work salmon fishermen for that particular project. It was kind of a neat project.
This was in the mid-90s?
Yeah, that was 1996.
Uh-huh.
And then once, you know, we had so much to do on the ranch because it was so run down. We really did not reach out to Ag Extension for a while. But once we did, we started going to their workshops and things, and two things happened there. We got connected with our local Ag Extension agent, who was very helpful directly. And then we also got to meet our neighbors, you know, and this is a pretty large area, so the neighbors are spread out. Everybody has a great big ranch around here. So we got to meet the neighbors, and meeting the neighbors was a huge help. So I'm still involved with Ag Extension up to this day, not so much for what I need to do, but for projects that we are mutually involved in.
So they're doing experiments on your ranch, or testing things out? Or?
No, it's not really experiments. I'm just, you know, fast forward 25 years, and I've gotten involved in a lot of community activities. So, you know, one thing I would say to new ranchers and farmers is to get out there and get involved in your community, because you not only learn a lot about what you can do on your place, you learn a lot about what you can do to help your whole community. Because if your whole ranching or farming community is not a healthy community, you suffer yourself. Everybody suffers. So, mm-hmm. You know, so right now the way I'm involved with Ag Extension is more not so much asking advice from them, although if I had a question, I certainly would, but it's more partnering with them through, I'm now involved with the Marin Resource Conservation District. My husband and I have gotten involved with other organizations, and we partner with Ag Extension now to meet community needs.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain for me a little bit more what you mean by community needs? What are some of the partnerships that are happening?
Oh, well, I've been a director of the Marin Resource Conservation District for probably 22 years now. The kinds of things that I did on my ranch originally, I am now able to try and help other ranchers to do. So, for instance, fencing off the creek, establishing off-creek water sources for the cattle, improving habitat for fish and birds and wildlife, you know, improving soils through good carbon farming practices, those kinds of things. I'm involved with the Marin Resource Conservation District. Then with Ag Extension, they are involved in lots of different projects, but one of them right now is to weigh in on what is going on with the ranches in Point Reyes National Seashore, and to make sure that the amendment to the general plan is supportive of those ranchers who do not own their land, but who rent from the National Park Service, but who are nevertheless an important part of our ranching community. So mm-hmm. those are a couple of examples.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
that first creek that you fenced off and planted, tell us about it now.
Oh, it's beautiful.
What changes can you see? I mean, now somebody coming onto the ranch and seeing that creek compared to what it was to what it is now, and sort of the benefits it brings to your ranch.
Well, I love the creek. I'm kind of a gardener, you know, at heart.
And
I like to improve things too. I was a social worker at one time.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the creek, if you had driven onto the ranch 5 years ago, the creek would have been completely bare except for 8 trees. It's about a half a mile of creek. And in the summer, it looked kind of like a moonscape. Really horrid. And there wasn't much that we had to do to it, really. It was pretty simple. There were a few gully repairs to keep the dirt from washing into the creek. But pretty much we just threw up fences and planted native plants, many of which were willow trees, which grow like weeds. And right now, if you look at the creek, I mean, to me, it is, you can see fish spawning occasionally. And it's just gorgeous. This particular creek is just gorgeous. It's not the only creek or gully we restored. Since then, we restored 8 other creeks and gullies, and we continue to try to upgrade these wetter areas on the ranch, because it's very hard in this part of the country to get water to anything. So
right.
We pretty much focus on areas where there is some natural water.
Yeah. And it was giving the cattle alternate water sources and the fencing to keep them out that was the key to making that work.
Yeah, you really, really, really have to give them alternative water sources. And the water does not have to come from the creek itself. It can come from springs. In our case, it came from springs. And NRCS was very helpful in partnering with us on some of that stuff. And so is the Marin Resource Conservation District.
When you first started, did it seem like a challenge for you? Were there times where you were wondering if it was worth the extra effort?
Yeah, never. I never doubted, not once. I never thought we made a mistake. We were just so busy and so involved and so full of hope and plans. It was a very exciting time. And I never thought we did the wrong thing, no. I missed all our friends in Hawaii. That was hard. But no, it was a great adventure.
What more can you tell us just about the operation, about the type of cattle, the business side of thing?
Okay, so that was another thing we had to think through, of course, because we had never, I didn't grow up on a ranch, you know. My mother, being a female, ended up having to marry and leave the ranch. My uncles all stayed on ranches, but all the girls left. So in my case, I'm the daughter of a daughter. So I didn't grow up on the ranch, although I visited my grandparents and I think developed the love of this area and ranching that I needed in order, you know, to be motivated to do all the work that I that was required to bring this place back to life. But so the cows, you know, that was a totally new thing for us. So we couldn't purchase cows right away because we didn't have any money. We put all the money into bringing the house around so that we could move into it and working on the barns and stuff. I will say that one thing we did was what we say around here, we malted the ranch. So we sold an easement to Marin Agricultural Land Trust, which gave us enough money to start fixing the barn and buying the cows. So that kind of gave us a start in the business end of it. We got 6 cows the first. We started out with 6 cows, and then each year we bought a little bit more. And the question of how to sell the cows and how to make money off of the calves. It was kind of a process that we went through. The first year we sold to a broker and we're really not very happy with the way that went. Mm-hmm. And so the second year we just kind of let people know that we were going to sell our animals to families, that we weren't going to go through anybody. I think the second year we sold 2 cows. The third year we sold 11 animals, not cows. And the third year we sold 41 animals. So at about the same time, Michael Pollan wrote an article for the New York Times Magazine entitled "This Steer's Life," which traced the life of a steer from a bucolic ranch setting to a feedlot and then a large slaughterhouse. And this kind of jump-started the whole grass-fed beef industry, I guess. And we had been doing it for a couple of years by then, but all of a sudden, you know, we got discovered. And then the other factor was mad cow disease. Was all on the news, and it wasn't here. It wasn't a real threat here. But I think there were a couple of cases back east somewhere or in the Midwest, and then England had cases. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were interviewed on the news, and we were considered, progressive, I guess. So that's how our grass-fed beef business kind of got started. And we've been doing it ever since. We raise sheep and cattle, mostly cattle. And we sell quarters, halves, and whole beeves to families with freezers. That's our whole business. We don't sell to stores. We don't sell to brokers. The animals are slaughtered in a humane way here at the ranch, and that's how we do our business. So we have kind of a unique model, and I think had we not been kind of new to the business, we might not have been as open to trying something new as we were.
Mm. That makes sense. And with the shelter in place and how people have changed their buying habits, have you seen an increase in interest in your area as far as people wanting to buy your beef?
Yes, we have, because we sell directly to families. So some of our neighbors who sell to stores or grocery stores have had problems, and others have had problems because they depend on these large slaughterhouses, but mm-hmm. We have not. So our business has really thrived during this time.
Do you have some more future plans as far as more restoration projects or other changes you can see to make to the ranch or your operation?
I think, in our case, I would like to focus more on the pastures. In our area, we have a lot of problem with a certain thistle called distaff thistle. And our focus with our pastures has really been to try to get rid of or tamp down this particular thistle. So what we have done, because so much of our ranch is hilly, well, let me back up a little bit and say that originally we were certified organic, but we dropped our organic status because we needed to use Milestone, which is a big leaf
broadleaf
spray kind of application. So mm-hmm. we have contracted with a helicopter company over the last 10 years. We did it 2 years in a row about 8 years ago, and now we're doing it again. We've done it for 2 years, and now we have one more year, and then we'll stop again. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to get back to organic status, but we have such a problem in the area, and so many of our neighbors have it, that it just required this huge investment of time and money to address it.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing is we spray about 200 acres from a helicopter, then we mow, we pull. In the past, we've even burned. I've had people out who have, you know, dug up the thistle as a group project, and I've even had a cellist playing music at the same time and a local dairyman supplying ice cream. So, you know, we've just tried absolutely everything. But we're down to using the helicopter now for one more year, and we'll just have to continue to do it by hand and with the tractor forever because it's such a big problem. But what I would like to do, your question was, what would you like to do in the future? And what I would like to do in the future is try and I would really love to spread compost on the fields and to seed them and to do it a number of years running so that I can really boost up the health of the pastures themselves. That is one thing that I would like to do. In terms of restoring the fields, you know, there's always a project. With the drought, the cattle need shade, and we're constantly trying to put up windrows or plant along the gullies where there's a little bit of water, or even put up shade trees, you know, so there's better shade. We can kind of ameliorate the problems that are brought up by the heat. But in general, you know, just maintaining what we have so far is a big push. We do have an orchard, an apple orchard, and I should say that a big piece of the way that we do business here on the ranch is we are very open to other people coming and visiting the ranch. So our apple orchard, all of our apples are sold directly to families who come and pick the apples. So we have you pick in the fall. All of our pears are sold that way. And we also have hosted weddings. So everything that we have done to improve the ranch has not only benefited wildlife and the cattle and our customers, but it has benefited our business as well as the environment, shall we say.
Great.
Was that your hope or your intent when you started out, or was that something you learned as you went and realized that, you know, these benefits were accruing side by side?
You know, our goals when we first came here were only to support ourselves. We both gave up good jobs, and our goal was to be able to live here and to be able to maintain the ranch. That was it. That was our goal. As we went along, we realized that there were ways that we could improve the environment on the ranch as well. And we, you know, as I said before, we depended a lot on NRCS, MRCD, Ag Extension, even Marin Agricultural Land Trust. And we took whatever help, you know, was offered in order to, you know, make the ranch a healthier place. Mm-hmm. So then our goal became more kind of a three-part goal. We wanted to do the very best for the animals that we were raising, for our customers that consume the animals, and for the environment at large, and then the community. We realized that we weren't an island. You know, the land, our land is connected to our neighbor's land, which is connected to their neighbor's land. It's one piece of land. Mm-hmm. The river runs through the whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. So we are all connected. So whatever I can do to help my neighbors achieve their goals, helps us all. So it's just one big tapestry.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a great way to look at it.
How have your neighbors responded to some of the work that you're doing? They're interested in it?
You know, I consider my neighbors, everyone who lives in what we call West Marin, mm-hmm. the ranching community, and there is a great desire to do the kinds of things that we have done on our ranch across the board. Not everyone, of course, is on board, but there is more of a need and a desire to improve the environment on ranches than there is funding to accomplish those goals.
Hmm.
So it's never the problem that there aren't enough people interested. The problem is there isn't enough money to do what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. Mm. What advice would you give to a young rancher or any land manager whose land was like yours, the moonscape you described, that one creek bed, you know, to keep it, to improve it or keep it from becoming degraded?
You know, I would say, you know, if you're a new rancher or a new farmer, that there are people all around you who have a lot of knowledge about how to properly care for your animals, how to properly care for the grasslands. A rancher is a grass farmer, basically. If you don't have healthy grasslands, you don't have healthy animals. So I would recommend that they reach out to their neighbors. If they hear or read of somebody who's doing something innovative, call them up. Or somebody who's particularly successful or respected, call them up, go over there, talk to them face to face, see what they're doing, and see how it applies to you. Of course, I would also urge them to reach out to their governmental agencies or, you know, quasi-governmental agencies and nonprofits, and see how they can become involved themselves, how they can contribute, but also what they can learn, and perhaps explore some cost share projects so that the burden of improving the environment on their ranches, which is a common sort of interest of many people, mm-hmm. can be cost shared and, you know, can be possible. It's very hard when you're starting out in farming and ranching. It's hard to make any money, you know, producing your product and selling your product and figuring all the marketing out and all of that stuff. You know, that's hard enough as it is. Mm-hmm. But if you're also interested in putting in some environmentally beneficial projects, there are cost share programs available, and I would recommend that they reach out to NRCS, National Resource Conservation Service, the local RCDs, Ag Extension, their local UC Davis or whatever Ag Extension. And usually these people partner together, and you know they can refer you if you have a particular need. They can refer you, or a particular question, they can refer you to somebody else. So that's what I would recommend. First thing I would recommend is that you do kind of a self-check. Like if you're thinking of starting out but you haven't, you know, purchased land or start or paid your first rent check or anything, I think the first thing I would do is look inward and ask myself, how badly do I want to do this? How much do I love this idea?
Mm-hmm.
Am I willing to work really hard for not, you know, not a lot of financial gain? I think the first thing is you just have to be super motivated yourself. And honestly, once you're super motivated, the other stuff will come eventually.
I think that's some incredibly good advice, to have that motivation and passion, and also know that it's hard work. If you're not willing to put in the work or the passion's not there, it may not work, but I liked what you had to say about the rest will come if you're willing to put in the work and have the motivation.
Yeah, it will come. I mean, I would say don't get discouraged. Just keep finding solutions. If one door closes, find another and open that door. But you'll get there eventually. You know, maybe the other thing I would say, honestly, is that sounds very serious, but honestly, working outside, I mean, for me, it just fills my heart and floats my boat. You know, the beauty is all around you. It's right there. All you have to do is recognize it and appreciate it and, you know, sort of partner with it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, put in use your talents and your intelligence and your physical strength and create something beautiful, but appreciate at the same time that you are standing in the middle of something beautiful and magical and wonderful, and just appreciate it and enjoy it every day.
Very good advice.
Good advice and very inspirational. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Sally, anything else that we should know about your ranch or your journey?
I don't think it really fits in, but I was going to mention the Chileno Valley Newt Brigade.
You have to mention the Newt Brigade now.
Yes.
It's just so funny. Mm-hmm. It has such a funny name.
It does.
So the Chileno Valley Newt Brigade is a group of volunteers who were established last year to address the problem of newts becoming crushed and killed on Chileno Valley Road as they cross the road from their habitat under the trees into the lake to breed. And then they also have to return. After they breed, they have to go back across Chileno Valley Road and up into the hillside where they live for 6 months of the year. So what we started noticing, you know, years ago was that when it was really rainy, all the newts would come out and people would just ignore them and just drive over them and kill them. So a lot of these newts were killed in the road. It was really horrible. Mm. Anyway, last year, finally, along with many of my neighbors and friends and other interested individuals, started a group called the Chileno Valley Newt Brigade. And we've done two things, and we've only done it for one season. But the two things that we do are, we go out when the newts are running, and that's almost every night from the end of November until March 15th. Mm-hmm. But some nights there are lots and some nights there are few. And most of the nights there are, you know, less than 10. So anyway, we go out every night for an hour or two and we look for the newts and we pick them up. And if they're headed toward the lake, we take them to the lake. If they're headed toward the hills, we pick them up and we take them to the hills. But before we do that, we photograph them and we collect a certain amount of data on them so that we know more about where they cross, how many newts there are, what different breeds there are, what time of day they cross, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So we've collected that information and sent it to iNaturalist. So it's all there under Chileno Valley Newt Brigade. We're going to use this data to see if there is some way that we can assist the newts without physical human intervention, for instance, culverts, little fences, a raised platform, little fences that go into a bucket that somebody empties, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of at that stage where we're looking for funding to do a feasibility study to find out what option really makes sense for this particular location. However, this coming fall 2020, even with COVID, we'll be out there again, picking up the newts and helping them cross the road without getting run over by cars.
Great. So
this is just one, you know, one one thing that sort of emphasizes the whole idea that, you know, it's, you know, these lines that create these ranches are a human artifact, but the land is continuous. It's all one thing. And, you know, there are things that need to be done on places that maybe you don't own, but maybe with cooperation from neighbors working together, you can make positive changes in those areas too.
Mm-hmm. That's a great project. I love it.
Oh, it's really fun. And you would not believe the people that volunteer. They are so wonderful and so interesting themselves, you know.
Mm-hmm. There's a joke in there somewhere. Why did the newt cross the road? Or how did the newt cross the road? But we'll get the answer to that later somehow.
Well, the newt crosses the road for sex and then for a good night's sleep.
Well, there you go.
Depends on which way he's going. it's always sex, food and sex.
Yep. Biology has its mandates.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great story and a great project. Thank you, Sally.
You're welcome. It's been fun.
It has. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks for talking with us.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to Fresh Growth. We hope you enjoyed this episode. For more information on Western Serre grants and our learning resources, visit westernserre.org.